I'm Lauren Sega, Manager of Communications for Homeport, a nonprofit affordable housing developer in Central Ohio. We're in one of the fastest growing areas in the country, and while we've seen the growth, we've felt the pains that come along with it, especially when it comes to housing all of us and our incoming neighbors. Each month, we're interviewing local experts on the issues, the barriers, and the solutions around housing and development, hoping to shed some light on how we got where we are and what we can do to create a future that houses everyone. This is Level With Us. We've seen thousands of headlines over the last year about not only Central Ohio's housing shortage, but the state of housing nationwide. The U.S. is short nearly 5 million homes, leading to rising rates of not just homelessness, but of those considered housing cost burdened, spending half of their income or more on rent. Tackling this crisis demands action on all levels of government, and today I am with Vincent Coleman, Government Affairs Director with Columbus Realtors, to discuss the state of our housing market, how recent election results will impact it, and the policies being considered on the local, state, and federal levels. Vincent has worked to promote fair housing policies in his time as a policy advisor at the State House and in his role with Columbus Realtors. As an organization, Columbus Realtors works with commercial practitioners, residential realtors, affiliates, roofers, contractors, etc., and partners with orgs like Homeport, Columbus Metropolitan Housing Authority, or CMHA, and the Affordable Housing Alliance of Central Ohio, AHACO, and others to push the narrative that we need more housing, and we need it fast, but in a smart and responsible way. Let's lay the foundation. Columbus Realtors releases a monthly housing report. As of September, we're seeing an uptick in housing inventory, or the number of houses that are out there on the market for sale. Central Ohio is now up to a 2-month supply, a quantity we haven't seen since 2018.
So that's a positive uptick. I mean, year over year, we see about 3% in gains. So, it's a seller's market right now. And a healthy market would show that we have 6 months of inventory. I don't think we get there anytime soon, but you just see that it's a growing market.
When I asked how long it's been since we've had a 6-month supply of housing inventory, Vincent said it's been years. I looked at the Columbus Realtors housing reports that date as far back as January 2017. And at that time, we had a housing supply of just over 4,300. As of September of this year, we have roughly 500 more homes in our inventory. That said, our population also grew by more than 44,000 people. One factor influencing our inventory is interest rates. People who locked in at a low interest rate are staying in what was supposed to be their starter home, rather than moving into a larger house and freeing up that starter home for another family. But rates are on the decline.
The Fed's made a 75 percentage point cut. We're expected or anticipating another cut in December. Mm-hmm. I will note that interest rates are not a one-to-one ratio to mortgage rates. In fact, we saw a cut in interest rates, but yet a spike in mortgage rates, which I'm not an economist. I couldn't even play one on TV unless it was a comedy, but I don't think that's necessarily unusual. I think we'll see that start to level out. But with lower interest rates, it means that folks are able to take out loans or mortgage loans and not have such high bills on the back end. I think over the next year, 2 years, we will see that level out.
As has been said before, the solution is simple. More housing. But how do we get there?
There aren't a lot of options.
Yeah.
I think we'll talk about this a little bit later, but, policies that incentivize folks to, incentivize developers to build more, to have more options. We talk about housing for all being from subsidized housing to luxury housing. We need housing at all price points. But what we're missing is just that, the missing middle. Mm-hmm. We are missing that true path to home ownership, and that puts a strain on the market. It puts a strain on how comfortable folks are at getting into the market, quite frankly. And home ownership looks a little different to everybody. Mm-hmm. For the probably older couple that can't maintain their 2,500 or more square foot home looking to downsize, well, maybe that's a condo. Maybe it's a townhome. that person that's in a townhome that wants to build their family and move in, so that becomes available. So there's a lot of pieces to the puzzle, but I think that with more friendlier policies that aid to increasing development instead of stalling it, I think we'll start to see some of that turnaround.
We discussed in a recent bonusode with Roy Lowenstein how the types of housing likely to be developed are pretty standardized. Contractors know what kinds of builds will be approved, what can be done amid construction costs and workforce challenges. We're not seeing the variety of housing Vincent is talking about, because in many cases, it isn't economically feasible.
It's all local, right? And quite frankly, part of the State House, making inroads. For the first time you talk to any housing advocate, they saw very housing-friendly policies come out of the last budget. Again, you talk to anyone, it wasn't enough. I mean, it scratches yet the surface, but, continuing to, add some incentives into new construction, new builds, and having some affordability components to it.
Another factor in our housing market is the presence of institutional buyers, out-of-state investors who are buying up homes, driving up property costs, and then sitting on those vacant properties.
Through institutional investing, here in Central Ohio, it's kind of leveled out, not even leveled, but died down a bit. It still is an issue nationwide, even here in the state. They come in and buy properties, sell those properties, they increase in value, but what they also do is displace families. When you talk about maybe buying three homes in a row at $400,000, let's say, when the price was $350, what does that do to the home that was priced at $350? It increases it, therefore it increases property taxes. And that kind of has a domino and ripple effect within that neighborhood. And they're not going on the market anytime soon. They're just letting it go up, and only hurts those that are in those communities. Institutional investors are not, in our opinion, a protected class. And there's legislation in the State House that kind of aims to curb this. It's still in its very early stages. I don't know where it goes, but limiting the amount that an outside investor could have to 50 units per county. And so I think that could be a solution.
Is it at all incumbent on sellers to be more mindful of who they're selling to? Ultimately, if you're getting 20% over your asking price, most people would sell without a question. They'll be gone. Who cares after that? But is there some kind of responsibility on the part of the homeowner? How would you even get someone to forego potentially tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of dollars for the common good?
I think it comes on education. Here's the unintended consequence of taking that big cash offer. We talk a lot about institutional investing, and often what's mentioned is wholesaling, which is the buying and selling of contracts. And we have a bill that we're working with in the State House as well as with Columbus City Council, which I hope we'll see some movement here soon. But it goes back to that consumer education. Here, at least on the wholesaling side, you're being offered an offer. It could be a below market offer. We recommend you consult an attorney or a realtor to find the true value of your home, and working with a realtor to sell your home so that you are truly getting the benefit and not getting fleeced out of equity. The institutional side of it, too, is, it's hard to combat. Mm-hmm. When you have these, you're looking at a $400,000 offer, and it's $320. Like, okay, yeah, that sounds great. And so that, I think, just really comes down to educating the public and consumer to really take a second look at what's being presented.
And now it's time to level up. The Trump administration campaigned on a variety of housing policies, from imposing tariffs and deporting undocumented immigrants, to investing in opportunity zones and freeing up federal land for development. But what does that mean here in Central Ohio?
You talk about construction workforce, labor force that is already, low, right? And I would say a third of the construction population for workers are immigrant workers. And so we're talking about deporting close to not all, but almost 3 million, maybe undocumented, documented immigrants, that has a huge impact on housing. Already a strained labor force, already high costs, already lengths in terms of development, that only is exacerbated by potentially removing a third of the workforce. I mean, it's to be determined. I think folks have a mixed feelings, so to speak, in terms of what to expect. Mm-hmm. But understanding that the president's the president, you know, and housing was on the ballot at the national, state, and local levels of government. And so folks are feeling, you know, the burden, probably the burden in terms of increases in property taxes from some of these school levies that passed. You know, reappraised values went up, obviously, this past year in 23. So we're really just worried about, you know, being able to put food on the table. And so that's most, I think, first and foremost what folks are thinking about. For my, you know, membership, it's, you know, how can we get more homes and how can we get people in those forever homes?
Federal policy is still TBD, but Vincent says we can look at more localized efforts to get an understanding of where we are in the housing crisis and where we could be going.
And my crystal ball is in the shop because it came with some bad predictions for the Bengals season. But I think that the next 4 years, you know, to be determined, right? I mean, while we see it locally, positive investments in housing affordability, here locally through Zone N, through Columbus, the city of Gehanna modernized their zoning code. So it takes a little bit of everybody to take a look at what's going on, what are the hurdles that we are seeing, and what can we do to build in a smart, responsible way. You know, and part of our advocacy is working with local municipalities, assisting them in housing assessments, and being able to make sure that what they're putting forth makes sense, and trying to combat some of that nimbyism, shall we say, in that we don't want growth. Well, if you want the Target, if you want the Whole Foods, you want that coffee shop, you have to have people. We have to have different options for housing, and that then spurs that economic development, economic growth. Columbus is Columbus. You know, it has, what, almost a million people. But our advocacy in Gehanna, our advocacy in Reynoldsburg, and these other small municipalities is saying that, or in Worthington, I'll even add, is, okay, we have this a housing assessment. it's calling for 2,000 more homes, single-family homes. Some of those need to be priced at $250,000 or below. How can we get there? Now, we know we're not going to get there overnight, but what are some things that we can put in place? And, you know, it is a tough conversation in some areas, particularly in the rural parts of Central Ohio, or, you know, looking at things like moratoriums on residential development.
In the face of the growth, like, yeah. What is the goal?
It's
there?
The small but very vocal minority of folks that, you know, show up to council, show up to a trustee meeting that are saying, hey, we don't need it. We're growing too quickly. There's a lot of fear behind that, and it's just trying to get ahead of that with data and storytelling, quite frankly. You talk about policies, and that's part of, you know, what I do. I give data, here's the real-world impact. But when I bring a member, I bring a constituent and say, hey, this is how this is affecting my business. This is how it's affecting our neighborhoods. That helps a bit. That helps.
At the state level, Vincent proposes a higher threshold of votes to block residential and commercial development.
You know, investing in, you know, LIHTC and single-family housing tax credits, combating some of these efforts to restrict residential development and restrict commercial development. Maybe it's putting a housing department within the governor's office to bring in experts and housing advocates to really walk through what policies look like. In fact, the Senate Committee on Housing, Michelle Reynolds being the chair, and Herschel Craig, the ranking member, both Central Ohio senators, have really taken the lead in bringing in all voices to try to put together, you know, a package that benefits everybody. Talk about local. It's zoning. Right, zoning plays a critical role, and particularly here in Ohio, being a home rule state, residents are able to through referendum, turnover or reject housing construction development. In fact, a big provision in the state budget, was increasing the threshold of signatures allowed from 8% to 15% of the previous gubernatorial race. What that means is, let's just use simple numbers, right? A township of 200 people, 15%, you gather signatures of 15% of 200 people, that is enough to go on, take it to the voters and say, hey, we don't want this new multifamily unit. And so I think that, you know, policies that want to increase that threshold, look at really reforming zoning at the local level, because it does take just that little of an effort to overturn something that could have a big effect on a local economy.
We discussed the impact of local zoning reform in Episode 5, Zoning In. One way it can make a difference is in allowing for more creative development, such as in the use of accessory dwelling units, or ADUs. Zoning that allows these ADUs would enable homeowners to build extra housing on their property, maximizing land use.
We're pro accessory dwelling units. In fact, we were very active in Gahanna in terms of that. We remain active in Columbus through Councilmember Manuel Remy in the pilot program. They just had their housing committee on Tuesday to talk a little bit about what that pilot looks like for low to moderate income households. But accessory dwelling units offer not only a creative way to increase the inventory, but also some supplemental income for folks that are looking to do that. If you have a parent that you know is probably going to need some care, but to offer that semi-independence, to have whether it be detached or attached unit on site, or a child that needs care, but also needs that semi-independence. So accessory dwelling units offer just that creativity in terms of increasing inventory while also helping out those that need. Here in Central Ohio, we look at some, you know, friendly accessory dwelling unit policies. We push, you know, pro policies for ADUs, quite frankly. I know some of the pushback is having it be considered a short-term rental. What are the parking requirements in already stressed areas and neighborhoods? So there's still some narrative to push, but we did a study with the AARP. It really just goes to the pros of accessory dwelling units and kind of get creative, right? You have a garage that you're not using. You know, why not, convert that to a one-bedroom for a college kid that's just out of, or recently college that doesn't have many options.
As we close out our conversation, I asked Vincent to give buyers and sellers some advice as they navigate the current housing market and prepare for any changes to come.
Well, you're talking to the Government Affairs Director for the Realtors Association, so my answer is consult a realtor. But ultimately, whatever is comfortable within the budget. Yes, it's a seller's market, but what do they say? They say marry the house, and you could refinance a little later in terms of lowering that mortgage rate. So, don't be afraid to buy, but also work with a realtor, a licensed real estate professional to see your options. You know, there are a lot of resources out there. The state introduced their Home Buyer Savings Plus program earlier this year. Many banks are looking at first-time buyers and offering resources. We go back to kind of the policies that were presented during the election on the presidential side. I mean, both campaigns talked a lot about helping out first-time home buyers. So it's becoming a large part of the narrative, and I think it's really taking precedence here at home and D.C. All politics is local. And local engagement is incredibly important. We talk about combating some of this NIMBYism. You know, a question that I often get is, well, what can we do? I say half the battle is showing up. You may not have to speak, but if you're there, you're there in a collective and have a collective voice, well, that raises some eyebrows in terms of really reconsidering some of, what's being said on the opposite side. That's what I tell my folks all the time. Half the battle's showing up. You don't have to speak.
Level With Us is brought to you by Homeport and is recorded, mixed, and edited by Lauren Sega. All sources are in the show notes. Homeport creates strong communities by developing quality, affordable homes on a cornerstone of dignity, security, and opportunity. To learn more, or if you'd like to support our mission, visit us at homeportohio.org.